You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where our waves aren't red or white or blue or amber, and made of grain. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you thought all the bluster over the midterm elections was farcical, then you're in the right place, and your friends probably would be too, so why don't you tell them about the show? Also, if you're on Twitter, check out Funny Libertarian with one N. He's funny and libertarian. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
The midterms were fun here. You know, because of all the crying and whatnot, and all the drunkenness and whatnot. It's a city where you really want to go. You, like New Orleans, you want to go to for Halloween.
Or Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras. You want to come here for a midterm election. Or a presidential year election. But
Is there like a calendar out there, Daniel, of all the cities in the country and what month you want to visit them in?
I'm sure some blogger somewhere has done that, but I don't have one bookmarked.
That'd be, maybe we can make that project, or one of the midsiders can out there. Like, go to Chicago on St. Paddy's Day to see the Green River, or you can go to Boston on St. Paddy's Day. There's going to be a city for each month, I think.
Otherwise known as cities Justin will avoid on these particular days.
Unfortunately, my girlfriend is born near St. Patrick's Day and wants to go to Chicago, so that's going to be fun.
Yay.
But anyway, I'm assuming the crying during the elections was on both sides, because both sides thought there was going to be this big wave for them, and then it was like every other midterm election, like somehow maybe this country was designed to have checks and balances, and both sides had victories.
Yeah, it wasn't... I mean, the blue wave came in the form of a big gain in the House, but that's also historically how it works with a midterm. And then the Republicans not only kept the Senate, but strengthened their position in the Senate, so they're just going to be a judge factory for the next 2 years. So both sides can claim some sort of victory, certainly not a moral one, but at least some sort of victory. And meanwhile, we, the people, will continue to be screwed.
We continue to weep and weep openly. And if you're me, not participate. Also joining us from Dale's Lawn, identifying as a woman to forego his white male gay privilege, William Green.
Hello, hello. I know this is might be Veterans Day if you're listening to this earlier in the week. So happy Veterans Day to all of those folks with family that served in foreign wars. And I think it's interesting. There's a lot of, speaking of victory, I heard Ocasio-Cortez can't afford rent in Washington, D.C. What say you, Daniel?
I say good, stay out. It's policies like hers that have created such a horrible rent culture in Washington, D.C. and other major metropolitan areas. So eat it.
I heard someone also claim it takes almost $6,000 to move into D.C. I was like, where? Are they like in Northeast somewhere? Like, that's not going to get you anything.
Yeah, I don't know what $6,000 to burn in a barrel outside because you will be homeless with only $6,000.
Oh, yeah, that's how they keep, like you said, that's how they keep warm during the winter, Daniel.
Just burn piles of money.
Yeah.
Are they going to throw it into the famous DC attraction, the Money Pit? They just toss the money down it and watch it go into this infinite hole.
Yeah, man. $6,000 to move to D.C. I want to know where.
William, I have a question that occurs to me and could make me a bad friend or potentially make me look like an idiot to the listeners. Weren't you enlisted? Didn't you serve?
No, I did not. I was a uniformed civilian, kind of a middle ground. I was a civilian, but I was deployed to hostile environments a few times, so... Yeah, there's pictures of me in a uniform running around with a gun. But mostly what I did was forensics work. That's the thing I did the longest. But I also did basically network scanning and testing, like looking for bad guys on the networks that are deployed to support the troops and do command and control and stuff like that.
So where were you deployed?
I've been, for hostile deployments, I've been to Iraq. I've been to Afghanistan 3 times and other places.
So then are you not considered a veteran or are you considered a veteran?
I am not considered a veteran. Yeah, that's reserved for people who take a slightly different oath than I did.
Okay, but you still put your life at risk to defend freedom, correct?
Yes, that's the general understanding.
Okay, so then, you know,
I mean, if you ask Edward Snowden, I was there to oppress the Americans, but it's a matter of perspective.
And in my perspective, I think you deserve a thank you while we're thanking other people who risk their lives for freedom. Do you agree, Daniel?
Well, since he's not a true veteran, why don't we just give him a thanks and not a thank you?
Fine. Fine.
Thanks, William.
Because of you, we can now talk about all of this ridiculous farce that happened this past week. It's time for The News with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
Well, if you enjoy all the farcical news and you really want to help us spread the word, you can help us do so on Patreon. Patreon's a platform that allows us to collect some money from the content we create here. A lot of it is to help us keep the lights on and whatnot. So you can go to patreon.com/themidside and choose to give a couple bucks per episode or whatever you can afford. That helps us spread the news here. News such as this. Thousand Oaks shooter joins list of white men rampaging in Pittsburgh and Tallahassee. So where were they radicalized? Asks Kasim Rashid. Yes, he begins this Think article from NBC.com with this. Privilege is when, in a 2-week span, white men kill 11 Jews in Pennsylvania, 2 black people in Kentucky grocery store, 2 women in Florida, a Florida yoga studio, and 12 people in a California bar, yet no one calls to ban, deport, or profile white men, or asks where were they radicalized. Ah, check your privilege, whiteys. He continues, imagine for a moment if the suspects were from a minority demographic, like Muslims or immigrants. We would probably send in the military, and many people would demand the minority demographic hold their own members accountable. Does this happen when the suspects are white men? But in fact, we don't have to wonder. We can simply look at the actions of the Donald Trump administration. It took far less for the government to send in military to counter brown immigrants. Despite the fact that the allegedly dangerous migrant caravan has killed no Americans, the White House literally sent thousands of troops to block them, even initially suggesting American soldiers should have the right to shoot migrants who throw rocks. Meanwhile, gun violence has killed over 12,500 people in 2018 alone. The only real response from the White House has been a strongly worded thoughts and prayers. So, Justin, should we be rounding up white men and putting them in, I don't know, internment camps or something?
Wait, did we already try that? Oh, no, wait, Jewish people aren't considered white people, right?
Because well, in the United States, we put Japanese in internment camps, so,
yeah,
you know.
We shouldn't put anyone in internment camps. And the thing about this article, I'm going to take a hard line stance. Don't put
brave.
People in internment camps.
Very brave.
Very brave. Very brave. My virtue signal is out of the way. Am I the only one who notices he's not comparing apples and oranges in this article? He's like, hey, so here's an entire race that I think is evil. And you people think groups of people who make choices to believe certain things or act in certain ways are evil. He's comparing being white to being Muslim, which is a religion. Or am I wrong? And Muslim's also an ethnicity the way Judaism is? And he's also comparing them to immigrants.
No. The point of clarification, it would be Islam is the religion. A Muslim is someone who follows Islam. So to make your point even more concretely, no one is asking even the question like, you know, should we round up all the Muslims or what do the Muslims think or where the Muslims radicalized? The question is, and maybe even rightly so, is there something about Islam that makes it a religion that when people follow it to its extreme, they want to hurt people? individual Muslims must be judged on their own actions and their own actions alone, but an ideology, a religion like Islam, can be judged based on its content. So
right.
I suspect you're going to further this individualistic theme here with your commentary.
Well, right. No one's going around saying like, hey, people who choose to take actions because what they say their religion says, which other people disagree with, right? We even have people who, other Muslims disagreeing with them that that's what Islam says. No one's saying round up people who come from those countries that also have Muslims in it and kick them out. No one's like, hey, all Middle Easterners need to leave. That's a much different argument than Islam is a problem, or what is the problem with Islam, as you're saying. It's yeah. just absolutely ridiculous. And then he's trying to equate that with whiteness. So now the way you're born genetically, skin color is now what's wrong with that? Like, is there, like, let me ask you something, Daniel. Does half of you, because you're half white, right? Mm. Half white, half Mexican.
Mm-hmm.
Does half of you every day be like, have to really resist mass shooting people? Because I'm white, but I've never had the urge to commit a mass shooting. It's not hardwired into my DNA. It wasn't like I was born with the gene to commit mass shootings.
You know, it's because I guess it's because I'm only half white that I just want to shoot individual people. Like, I don't want to do it in big groups.
Ready so. For my really racist comment of the the episode?
It's this still isn't the forthcoming.
First one. Yeah.
So that's just your first one. So you're half white and half Mexican. Maybe they just counter each other out where you really want to commit mass shootings, but you're way too lazy to.
I just need a nap.
Yeah.
Saying.
Yeah.
Or I'm too busy mowing my lawn.
This is an absolutely ridiculous argument. And here's the thing. When you go down in the bottom of this argument, it actually isn't that bad. Oh, no, controversy. But my point is, he has to bury it behind this collectivistic racist argument. Notice also he's the one who says brown people. Is there anyone in the fucking world saying shit about brown people? Like, I mean, people will say shit about Mexicans, but no one's ever like brown people.
I only hear that on the left as a caricature of people. Like, it's somehow about changing terms. You know, that's the left's like favorite tactic, right?
Yeah.
So if someone's talking about, hey, we've got to be careful allowing, you know, Islamic folks immigration, right? We have to vet them somehow because there's a danger there. They'll say, oh, you just don't like brown people, right? Like, they change the argument. Like, whether or not there's an argument there or not, right? They change the argument to be a caricature of the argument.
Right, 100%. And he does this, and it buries the point at the bottom. And one thing he says, I'm gonna take a kernel that I like out of what he says to try and be positive here. The one thing he says is looking at guns and making sure they're not getting in the hands of people who they shouldn't be in, who those people can't handle them responsibly. Now, I think he has a suppressed premise that that's white people, and I'm not saying that, but I've said it again and again. This is a mental health issue, and this might be the least libertarian position I'll take, but we need to do something about mental health and purchasing guns. I don't want to use the word gun control because that makes you seem like a lefty. And I want to say gun laws because that makes me feel like a lefty. But we have to do something so people who have a history of mental health issues, and as he does say, people with a history of domestic violence, a history of violence, cannot get guns. That is the issue. It is mental health. It is not any of this collectivist nonsense. Judge each individual by their past actions and their own health status, and that's how you can decide if they can have a gun or not. Am I gonna lose my entire audience, Daniel?
You've now certainly your libertarian card has been revoked. But
I would only caveat here the what you're saying, Dustin, with and it's only particular kinds of mental diseases that.
Oh yeah, certainly.
This, right?
Yeah, 100%.
You know, the other thing I noticed in this article is that. Look at the conclusion. It says no easy solution exists to stopping hate and extremism. Why is that the goal? I don't want that to be the goal. I don't want the government to be out to stop hate and extremism. Right? Those are incorrect goals. The goal here is to end violence, and violence as we mean physical force and coercion, not violence as in words, right? The real definition of violence. Why this constant focus on stopping hate and extremism is expending so much worthless energy at the wrong problem. So we don't focus on what Justin's saying. Instead, we go around silencing people from speaking, right? Committing violence against people who are speaking.
So I want to add on top of what you're both saying here a little bit, which is certainly this is a cultural failure, both in terms of mental health and in ideology. In a certain sense, more people find it acceptable to kill other human beings.
I challenge that premise about it being more. It's
in this particular style. I don't mean more overall. As we've noted on the show, violence is down, and even mass shootings per se are down. But in this particular style, Adam Carolla was talking about renaming this kind of suicide narcissicide, where
I saw
these people feel like, you know, I'm going to kill myself, but first I want to get my name in the news. So that's, I didn't finish my sentence quick enough, but I mean this particular style of killing people. But it's not just a cultural failing. It is a political failing. And I will say this every time one of these things comes up, and I will scream it to the high heavens. If government was doing what it's supposed to be doing, which is stopping violence, if government was limited to what it's actually supposed to be doing, police force, law enforcement, judges, etc. In this case, and in the Tree of Life case, the Tree of Life shooting incident, the police were informed that these people were going to do something bad. They were informed by people in the community that these people were going to hurt someone.
The guy, the FBI had tips about the guy in fucking Florida who shot up the school, dude.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm still angry about that.
Do your GD job. The thing you are supposed to be doing.
It's also extremely disingenuous in this article. They talk about gun control when California has some of the strictest gun controls in the U.S., right?
Yeah, he was using an illegal magazine. It's illegal in California.
Well, it's illegal to buy and sell. I actually have one of those magazines. Probably get arrested tomorrow, but I have a magazine because I lived in California before that law was passed, and it's illegal for me to, if I place it into my gun, I think it's illegal. But I've asked several lawyers, what am I supposed to do with this now, right? And no one can tell me what is the actual thing I'm supposed to do. They know for sure I'm not supposed to buy or sell it. But anyway, that's a whole different story.
You're supposed to go to the police station and give it to them, so then you can be on the blacklist and the California government can install cameras in your house.
Yeah, no one can tell me what I'm supposed to do with that. God forbid, as I always say, it's not the first 9 people you shoot, it's 10 and above. That's what makes it a particularly heinous crime.
So maybe California, other states, federal government, focus a little less on regulations and the type of fencing we put around our homes and red light cameras and smart parking meters and property taxes and other ways to squeeze every penny out of your citizenry, and focus a little more on stopping people who citizens tell you are going to hurt other people.
Yeah, I want to make that super concrete. In California, I know Dr. Drew has mentioned this before on his podcast, it's very hard when people have lost that ability to make their own decisions. It is very hard for folks to intervene. It's the way that mental health is treated by the government here in California is particularly bad. And there's no way unless you know someone is going to immediately harm themselves or others, there's almost nothing the police can do. And that there needs to be something different here. Like that, maybe I'll turn off some of our Liberty.me listeners, but I sure hope not. This is a case where someone no longer has that power of volition, right? There's got to be something done there. There has to be a way for folks to alert the government and gain, replace that errant, we're talking about mentally ill people, right? Get them the help that they need. I know this is going to sound controversial, but force them to get the help that they need, right? They cannot be in society and not and have this kind of problem, right? This is something that inevitably leads certain kinds of mental problems inevitably lead to these kinds of events.
Yes, and take a few of the people on parking patrol and put them, for instance, on monitoring some of these people's social media who you've been told about. It was either this guy or the Tree of Life guy who basically posted, like, I'm going to go do this today on social media.
You know, Daniel, we're saying things that make sense, but here's what that will actually end up being. They'll just go after right-wing folks, right? They'll go after the Proud Boys. They won't go after actual mentally ill people, right?
I mean, what I'm talking about is...
Wait, I thought being right-wing was a mental illness. That's what I heard out here in California.
Yes, it depends on who you ask.
Look at how social media is policed in England now. If in our current environment, if they started doing that, that's how it would end up. You would have people getting fines over making jokes rather than the actual goal of it would be just like parking tickets. Think of how many Twitter tickets I would be getting for all the dank memes I post.
But, and Daniel, this goes back to what you were saying Adam Carolla said about the narcissi. It's a deeper cultural issue of minding your own fucking business, taking care of yourself, and trying to protect yourself and do the least damage, and making sure the people that you care about and value are healthy and doing the least damage. People in California go out on the fucking road, and the way they drive is they don't even care if they fucking hurt someone or kill someone as long as they get where the fuck they have to go. That we no longer live in a culture of personal responsibility, because as William is saying, everything will just be offloaded to the government to legislate morality. And that's why, unfortunately, as much as I want to agree with you guys, even with what I said about the mental health and guns, how can you let them legislate these things? Because they're just going to legislate the morality of it.
Yes, well, I did start off by saying it's first a cultural problem, both in terms of mental health and in terms of ideas.
I know, so I'm just bringing it
that's
back.
That's first and foremost. And then to hammer home your point, Justin, the first line of defense is always the self. Understanding oneself, introspecting, knowing when something is not right with yourself. But the second line of defense is actually not the government. And this is Adam Carolla's point. The second line of defense are family and friends. The dumb TSA cliched phrase, see something, say something. The point being, know the people in your life, the people you care about, especially if they're your children, parents out there, and get them as much help as you can, especially if you think they're going to hurt someone. I get it. Call the police if you think it's that bad. But don't just call the police and be like, well, my job's done. Effing insist on it. Call the police every day, every hour. Do whatever you have to. Go to the media. Anything. Now, it is now our job to be the town crier about these things. You can't just give up after one phone call. You have to continue to do this because we can't continue down this path of these ridiculous kinds of killings. It's on us.
I've got even a bigger point. Be the police. And what I mean by that is, if you know somebody in your life and you're calling the police on them constantly, fucking break into their apartment and make sure they don't have a fucking gun. And if they get another one, take the fucking gun. Be personally responsible.
What? If they do have a gun and you break in their apartment. Well,
you do when they're not there, dude. You fucking go, you're like, hey, Johnny, you want ice cream? And like the mom goes and gets them to get ice cream, and then the dad breaks in and gets the gun. Come
in
on, man.
In this case, the killer is an 8-year-old boy.
You get my point.
I get your point. Well, Vogue has a point for you, Justin, which is along the lines of more horrible things that white people are doing. Why do white women keep voting for the GOP and against their own interests? Asks Michelle Ruiz. This is how this Vogue article begins.
It's not Michelle Smith?
Yes. No.
It's Michelle Ruiz. It's not Michelle Ruiz? Smith.
Oh.
It's not Michelle. Give me a Michelle O'Rourke. It's
Johnson.
Michelle Ruiz. Yeah, Michelle Johnson. Yeah.
The article begins like this. It's becoming something of a bleak election night ritual, assessing the exit polls and seeing that white women voters overwhelmingly threw their support behind conservative Republican male candidates again. They did it for President Trump, who won an estimated 53% of the white female vote. They did it with Roy Moore, accused of sexual predatory behavior in an Alabama special election. And while there were many thrilling historic wins for progressive women and women of color, in particular in the 2018 midterms, as well as data showing that some white women are peeling away from Trump, white women overall rendered more disappointment. The latest gut punches, courtesy of CNN polling, in Georgia's governor's race, an estimated 75% of white women, more even than white men, voted for Republican Brian Kemp, who is passionately pro-life, over Stacey Abrams, a staunch protector of women's reproductive rights, while 97% of black women supported her. In Texas, 60% of white women cast their ballots for Republican Ted Cruz, a supporter of alleged assaulters President Trump and Brett Kavanaugh, over Democrat Beto O'Rourke, who is a Beto
O'Rourke. Okay, was that slip up on purpose?
Yes. Okay. Who is dedicated to improving women's health care. 94% of black women backed O'Rourke, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As sure as black women have proven themselves to be the often underrepresented backbone of the Democratic Party, white women voters are establishing themselves maddeningly, confusingly, unsisterly. The article goes on to criticize white women, basically theorizing, for instance, that they are parroting their Republican husbands and are brainwashed by Fox and Friends. But she continues, finally, but either way, the rest of us shouldn't be shocked, because if history serves, there is plenty of precedent for white women protecting their own power and status. So, Justin, what is it with these white women?
Daniel, if I had the answer to that question, when has any man ever been able to brainwash a woman, let alone a white woman, ever? Has that ever happened?
I don't know. It seems inconceivable to me. I can't even imagine. Well, my wife's not a white woman, but I can't imagine telling her, like, hey, go vote for this person. She'd be like, go after yourself. I'm going to go to McDonald's. Not voting.
That is why she is awesome, because that is the right choice. If someone says, that's the whole thing, right? Everyone's like, go vote, go vote, go vote. Just like, yeah, I'd rather just fucking go to McDonald's. It is a healthier choice for me to go to McDonald's than to vote. Maybe the question is, why are white women voting? But no.
So what is my question for you, my real question is, what is the core faulty premise of this article?
That all white women are the same!
What?
What is this idea there? First of all, that they're all the same, right? They all have the same monolithic self-interest, right? Then there's the whole premise of Michelle Ruiz somehow knows what's better for these individual women than they know themselves. Hey, listen to me, who's never met you in your entire life. It has nothing to do with each other. We have nothing to do with each other. And all I know is your race and your gender. But I know what's better for you and how you should vote. And then the third premise is, somehow because you have a vagina and a uterus, you have to be pro-choice and pro-abortion. And I'm not saying those are the same thing.
Yes.
What the fuck? Like, I've met plenty of white women who were literally anti-abortion and pro-life. My mom being one of them. And that's not because of my dad. I've never once had a discussion with my dad about abortion. My dad just will say, like, fucking leftists and their, or he'll say liberals, fucking liberals and their pro-choice. But my mom has actually given me reasoned arguments for her stance on abortion.
Yeah. So.
Sorry.
Collectivism strikes again. William, why does this rhetoric among the left continue, even though it's so blatantly ignorant that people who vote for Republicans, people who vote anything other than the most progressive candidate vote against their interests?
You know, it comes down to the complete disregard and contempt for individual people's volition. That's what it comes down to. The left is constantly stymied, frustrated, and contemptuous of the fact that other people have power to make their own minds up. And this is disturbing. You're supposed to follow your group identity. And if you did, clearly, white women would vote progressive. That's how their logic works. And I'm putting logic in scare quotes there. It's all about this contempt for the fact that individuals can make choices and that it's good to do so.
Yeah, it might be I would maybe say it differently in an academic setting, but the way these people think about people voting against their own interests is why I don't want these people in power. because they are the ones who think they know best, because they think that groups outweigh the individual interests. They think that this quote-unquote progressive agenda outweighs any individual interest. This is why I don't want them in power. This is why I don't want them to have say over things, because they're ignorant. And when you take this ignorance and you combine it with political power, that is a recipe for, here comes the word of the year, fascism.
Yeah.
But well, actual fascism.
Let's bring it around, all the way around. If you're playing the drinking game, finish your drink.
All the way around.
Because...
Wait, no, they're not finished yet. We haven't mentioned Tom Brady and Bill Belichick. That's the next story.
All right. Well, didn't Rand point out that a moral choice isn't moral if you're not using your volition to make it?
Yeah.
I mean, if these people think, if they're voting what they think is their best interest, and like they gave an example of someone who works in a car shop with her husband saying that she wouldn't want people to find out that she was moderate, if that's a value to her, like, we can talk about it objectively, but as long as she thinks that's the right thing for her and it's not hurting anyone else, that's good, right? Now, it might not be objectively good, right? But it's good for her. She's making her decision, and I respect that. And I don't know why the Democrats and the far left can't.
Yeah. It's
because they externalize, William. They see her making that choice, and they say, because she's making that choice, she's hurting my ability to have an abortion, which then translates to them, she's hurting my ability to have power over my own body, therefore she's evil.
But this competing interests notion where, you know, we can vote against each other's interests or vote for or against our own interests is almost exactly why politics shouldn't matter that much. It's why the requirement for government should be as little a footprint as possible, so that we can take our competing interests and enter the world and engage accordingly. When we enter those competing interests in the realm of politics, we force other people to act against their own interests, or we force other people to act for our interest. So the entire point of this thing, to me, is that the government needs to do as absolutely little as possible so that we may take our own individual interests and put them together in this volitional, contract-based, voluntary system where we either work together or we do not to serve our own interests.
You know I agree with you, but the problem is these people are children. And it goes back to the externalities argument that Hillary Clinton was putting forth in the debates when she was talking about when you make a decision that goes against somebody else's decision, basically, I'm rephrasing here, your decision goes against somebody else's values. You are therefore causing harm, or as William said in the last story, words are now violence. So if you are doing something that goes against somebody else's interests, you are now committing violence against them.
Well, I mean, in politics, you are committing violence against them in a certain sense. You don't want to purchase healthcare? Too bad. Here's a gun to your head. You must do it. Because it's in your interest to do it. Regardless of whether or not it actually is in your interest, I've decided it's in your interest. So I understand why Hillary Clinton sees it that way, because in her world, it is all violence. Because it's all political. So.
Right, and that goes back to the idea we've talked about before, that the base premise that these people have is not the trader principle, right? We're coming from the idea that people are trading from each other, exchanging mutual values, and there's no negative reaction when people are pursuing what's best. Everything's win-win, right? Even if you don't get what you want in the moment, it's win-win. That's where we come from. Their alternative to the trader principle that they hold is the oppressor and the oppressed. They believe that every relationship has an oppressor in it and an oppressed person. And they want to be the oppressor ultimately. They tell you that when they want to stop you from being oppressed. But what happened was they suffered something, or they went through something, or they grew up with this belief somehow that they were the oppressed, and now they want to be the oppressor. That's it. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah. Marxism. There it is. Well, the White House this week had some controversy because it suspended the press pass of CNN's Acosta. Yes, according to The Hill, the White House faced swift backlash after it announced that White House correspondent Jim Acosta's press credentials would be revoked after an extended verbal confrontation between Acosta and President Trump earlier that afternoon. In a statement Wednesday night, White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders claimed Acosta, quote, placed his hands on, unquote, a young woman, White House intern who attempted to take the microphone from him. She further said, we will never tolerate a reporter placing his hands on a young woman just trying to do her job as a White House intern. As a result of today's incident, the White House is suspending the hard pass of the reporter involved until further notice. Of course, Jim Acosta took to Twitter to basically say that this is a lie. He did not put his hands on this young woman, although it is not refuted that he was very combative and he wouldn't really give up the microphone when asked to by the intern. So, of course, people took to Twitter and called this fascism and all sorts of things, and then the White House released a video that apparently had been sped up, whether they did it on purpose or not, to make it look more like Jim Acosta, like karate chopped this intern. There was a debate over that and whether or not that was propaganda, etc. And CNN is standing by Acosta. Justin, what do you make of all of this?
This was a watershed moment for me personally. I don't know how it was for you guys, but this really encapsulates everything that's going on in this country, and it encapsulates the divide and why Trump was such a bad choice for the Republicans to back. The first thing here I want to be clear about is both fucking sides were wrong here, okay? Acosta was wrong and Trump was wrong. And you want to know who else was wrong? Daniel, the fucking intern was wrong. Why do you think she was wrong? Or why do you think I'm going to say she was wrong?
Wrong shade of lipstick for that dress, or?
No, you don't fucking get involved in this shit. Are you kidding me? When the fucking president is arguing with a reporter who's been there for years, you're going to go over there and try and take the mic from the reporter? Fuck that. I'm just going to sit there and watch. Somebody else wants to do that? They can go do that. And they want to fire me for it? Fine, you can fire me for it. I'm not getting involved in that shit. She brought that on herself doing that. So that's the first thing. That's adding tinder to the fire. And then there's the reporter who, here's the thing. This reporter is obviously playing a game. He's playing a game the left always plays. They push the legal limits. They do things that have the appearance of being okay if you're not thinking about it, but really, if you are thinking about it, you're seeing how they're being manipulative. It's like when I was arguing with that one entertainment writer on Twitter about, she was complaining about naturalism in The Walking Dead because all the women were always freshly shaved, and then she called me a goofball. Now, on its face, that looks like she's just calling me a goofball, but what's she really calling me? She's calling me an asshole, but she, if I fight and I protest, she's going to make it look like I'm the one who's crazy because I'm responding like I've been personally attacked. Even though I have been personally attacked, she's going to make it look like I wasn't. That's what this reporter was doing to Trump. He was baiting him. And this is why Trump is the wrong choice for the Republicans and why I fear for our future, because I don't fear there's going to be a good alternative anymore. Because what did Trump do? He took the fucking bait. And this is why the right voted for him, because they're sick of the left doing this. They're sick of the left vote dominating the media and doing these tactics. So they want someone to fight back. But this proves you can't fight back in this way, because all this does is give the left more power, because people on the surface look at it and go, wow, Trump's being an asshole. Look at how he replied and look at how he banned the guy. Look at how he's abusing his power. Yeah. Oh, fascism, which only causes the sides to dig in deeper. Go ahead.
I was just saying, there was a real snatching defeat from the jaws of victory moment here for the president, where I think everyone in the world who's objective about this, including some people who are not really objective about it, thought that Jim Acosta's behavior was unacceptable. And if they had just said, we're suspending his press credentials because his behavior was unacceptable, this would have been a minor story. And now it's a major story because it looks like the White House is trying to create a propaganda video to heighten the insanity here. And no one thinks Jim Acosta actually assaulted this girl. He lightly touches her hand to put it.
I want to challenge that a bit, Daniel, because I think,
hold on. I don't disagree with anything you're saying, but it's even more basic than that. it's even more basic. William, I want you to challenge it all, because he does fucking fight back. He fights back. There's no argument. Whether it was reflexive or not, William can get into all that, and I'm sure he's going to put forward an amazing argument. But I want to go one step back than that. I'm talking about how Trump responded in the fucking moment. Dude, don't fucking argue with him. Just let him keep fucking talking and keep interrupting you. And then you know what you do? You say we're on to Cincinnati. Man, oh my God, the only way to handle the leftist press is Bill Belichick them. Has Belichick not proven that over his career? That is the only PR strategy here. And that is why Trump is the worst choice. We need to have a president who is going to Bill Belichick the press. Let him talk. And it's like you said, talk, 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 look like an asshole, and then afterwards ban him for being an asshole. And everyone who is objective would agree with you, and you're going to come out looking better. This is how you win the battle in the long run. The right is trying to win. I'm not fucking involved in this anymore. The right is trying to win this as a short-term battle, when they've already conceded so much, and voting Trump was the ultimate concession. And I'm fucking done with all of it now. I'm fucking sick of it. Go ahead, William.
I just wanted to push back a little bit on the releasing a doctored video. This is
no,
a narrative.
Hold on. Just to be clear, I said it appears like it. I don't actually think the video is doctored, to be clear. But
yeah,
God.
I think that narrative was created by CNN and the media, this narrative that Sanders claimed intern was assaulted, which we don't even know her name. It's never in any of these stories.
Which is why she shouldn't have gotten involved.
Yeah, with Sanders, all she says
is... Nobody gives a shit about you, intern.
Justin, what Sanders said was exactly what you would have wanted Trump to do, which is she said, hey, this behavior was not acceptable, so we're suspending the pass. That's what...
Yes.
Sarah Sanders said. But then CNN turned that into Trump was asked tough questions, and so he retaliated, right? So that was this initial CNN narrative. Then when Trump supporters and the press started saying, oh, Trump is claiming that intern was assaulted, now CNN says stuff about Sanders lying, right? But what Sanders said is the truth. And not to get super technical, but the video that people are talking about that might have been doctored, quote unquote, it's a GIF of a video. And if without getting into the math of it, when you take 29.99 frames per second and you put it into a GIF, things don't line up exactly right. Like the frame rates don't line up right. So doctored is the wrong word. It's just like a happy accident. If a few frames get dropped, then something might look like it's not going at a constant speed. So that's almost certainly what happened in this case for people.
But this
who are
is my problem
doctored
with the whole thing, William. It's not, I mean, the press is disingenuous. It's not a doctored video. My problem with the whole thing is we didn't need this part of it. And the White House should have, I don't know, one human being in the comms team who's smart enough to see that. One human being who can push back against Huckabee Sanders and say, we don't even need to release this video. We never need to mention the intern. The fact that Acosta wouldn't give up the mic is literally all we need to win this story.
Yep. Hey, period. I don't understand. In today's modern day, I'm pretty sure if we can buy those, what was it, $15,000 coffee cups we talked about 1 week? If we can buy that, can't we do a really creative thing, have two microphones, and when some blowhard reporter that isn't there to ask questions and is instead there to grandstand, you just turn their mic off, you turn the other mic on, and you have that intern walk to the next reporter.
This is what I mean. Do they not have anyone in the White House to think about these things?
Haven't
not
we? I think we've all of us have
being?
Been to OCON, right? Isn't that exactly what they do at OCON when you get someone standing up on one of the mics and asking some like 45-minute dissertation before instead of a question? They just turn the mic off.
This is what we do at every conference that my job puts on. You have two mics in the audience so you can go, okay, moving on to the next person. Thanks. Have a good day. Like, my point is the White House continues to fumble its way to defeat.
I agree with you guys that this is not the most effective way to handle it. That being said, this is Trump's way of handling it. Trump's base sees this and gets fired up. Now, whether Trump should be playing to his base or not, that's a question that I think we could all agree on. He should not be doing that, right? He should be more professional, right, than he is.
He should be a uniter, not a divider.
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say uniter.
That's a George Bush joke.
Yeah. But he's playing to his base. Every time he can make the story about the media instead of about anything else, he sees that as a winning issue. I think that's wrong. It can be part of his platform, but it seems to be all of his platform, which is why it's not going to be effective long term, which is why it's a danger long term, like Justin was saying.
But that's right. That's exactly the problem, is there is a legitimate issue with the media. You just said it. You just said it, that CNN framed the story that it was more than this guy was being a dick. And then the problem is that Trump needs to reply to that. So now the right thinks that that's the way to handle things, which then delegitimizes us making the argument that there's a problem with the media, because anyone on the left is going to hear me and say, oh, well, he's just right wing. He's just a Trump supporter. That's the problem. It creates these two sides when it's much more complex than that. And the way Trump is responding as if it isn't complex.
I think we're missing a whole nother dynamic here, and I'm surprised no one's brought this up. I thought we were supposed to hashtag believe all women. We have Sanders and this poor intern on one side, and then we have this very, very much privileged individual, the reporter and CNN, on the other side. I don't know how this story is even being run.
Because, William, they're white women who voted against their own interests.
I don't know. I see a man. I'm not sure Acosta has a penis, but I think he's a man. And
I'll have to check my social justice wrist chart. Everyone like Tom Brady, you know, flips open a wrist chart and yeah. Like to see what plays. And you're gonna have to check the social justice wrist chart.
You gotta add. Remember when we took that oppressor quiz? We gotta add up all their oppressor scores to figure out who's the right here.
That's right.
Just fucking interns in the future. Political interns. I know all the political interns in DC who listen to our podcast. Just don't get involved, please. Please don't get involved. Whoever
just
this
sit
girl
down.
Was,
just what are you going to do? Get fired from the job that doesn't pay you anything?
Yeah, I mean, come on. Just.
I mean, you could work at a think tank for $100,000 a year, so don't worry about it. All right. Speaking of playing to our base, a 69-year-old positivity guru in the Netherlands wants to legally change his age because he identifies as a 45-year-old. 49-year-old? He identifies as a 40-year-old, 49-year-old. So, Emil Rattelbond argues that if transgender people are allowed to change their sex, he should be allowed to change his date of birth because doctors say he has the body of a 45-year-old. This man is a motivational speaker and a media personality in the Netherlands, and he is suing his local authority after they refused to amend his age on official documents. Mr. Rattelband's case has now gone to a court in the city of Arnhemmen in the eastern Dutch province of Gelderland.
Yes.
I'm making all these words up. He was born on 11 March 1949, but says he feels at least 20 years younger and wants to change his legal birth date to 11 March 1969. Mr. Rattelband, who has converted to Buddhism, not sure why that was necessary factoid of the story, says, quote, I have done a checkup, and what does it show? My biological age is 45 years. When I'm 69, I am limited. If I'm 49, then I can buy a new house, drive a different car. I can take up more work. When I'm on Tinder and it says I'm 69, I don't get an answer. When I'm 49, with the face I have, I will be in a luxurious position. So, Justin, is this the slippery slope everyone was talking about?
Didn't we have an article that somebody identified as a baby? Wasn't that an article we had a couple years ago? Or last year? I don't remember anymore.
I can't believe this didn't make Woker joke.
I can't make Woker joke if I'm exposed to it. So my girlfriend said it to me, and then somebody put it in Discord. So the second that happens, like, it's spoiled.
I will just say that Discord has destroyed Woker joke, just to be clear.
Yeah,
just decimated
William.
It.
All right, all right. It. Well, I take that as a challenge. Guys, make sure you join our Discord, themidside.com/podcast. You'll see the link after in the show notes of every episode. Join our Discord, and I will make a special channel that none of us can get into, just the listeners, so, just so you guys can share Woker Joke stories with Daniel. So
yeah, and Daniel can get into it. Yeah, and by the way, in the, just the listeners, that was completely spontaneous. The plug for Discord was supposed to come later in the episode. So,
oh man, way to ruin the inside baseball.
Shilling.
Yeah.
You even ruined the show with the shilling, listeners. What are you doing? Why am I alienating the entire listener base? Why am I alienating the entire?
You've become a Democrat.
Already. God,
it works apparently. Right? I mean, yeah.
That's right. All these low self-esteem individuals out there.
Maybe I can find some listener stats in a closet somewhere.
So what do you guys think about the way that the judge responded? It's at the end of the article. It says the judge had some sympathy with Mr. Rattlebrand, as people could now change their gender, which would once have been unthinkable. But the court said there would be a practical problem in allowing people to change their birth date, and it would mean legally deleting part of their lives. The judge asked the nature of his early years from 1949 to 1969 if his official birth date was put back. For whom did your parents care in those years? Who was that little boy back then? The judge asked.
That's the problem. The problem is that pedophiles would change their birthday to be under 18. That's not the problem. The problem is, who did this guy's parents care for? It's not that we have just basically legalized pedophilia if this happens.
Why? I'm half sympathetic and half laughing at this judge. The half sympathetic is he's trying to point back to reality, right? But when we did that during the debate about people changing their sex, right, on documents, that argument was called intolerant. But here now, when it comes to age, you see the same argument again. Like, hey, shouldn't we be a little reality focused? Like, you know, you can be whatever gender you want to be, but like your sex is a thing, right? Like it's a physical thing in reality. No. Just like age, sex can be legally changed. We can use the power of government to try and fake reality.
Well, I have sympathy for the idea that he brings up that, well, if they can change their sex, why can't you change your age? Yeah, fuck it. If one thing's okay, it's all okay, right?
No, it's all fine. to your point, couldn't you just plug into his questions, like when you're trying to change your gender? But who was that little boy that your mom raised when you were a child?
Yeah.
Who was that little boy who went to school, etc.?
That was the mom being an abuser, Daniel.
The point, I think, of all this is you can't fake reality. And we shouldn't allow people to reality. Sorry. You can fake reality. You can't fake the consequences of faking reality.
This is why I try to be very careful when I use sex and gender, and I keep them very separate. Because there are folks for which their gender identity is very different than what people would what people would expect based on their sex. But we can't, because we mix the two, we end up with these crazy things where people are trying to fake reality. Like, you can look younger than you are. I've always looked younger than I am. I still get carded all the time. Yeah, exactly. I still get carded all the fucking time.
Yeah.
And I'm approaching 40, right? Now, I know this isn't going to last forever. I'm enjoying it. But, age discrimination is a thing. Like, we should talk about that, too, before we completely make fun of this person. Or after we've completely made fun of this person. Age discrimination is totally a thing. And I actually run into it often. I remember one time, actually, since it's Veterans Day, I'll tell this story. I remember one time, a very contentious incident response. I was in Afghanistan, and I had a general ask me, in a way that was very clearly, you're too young to be leading this team, how long have you been doing this? And in my head, the immediate answer that came out was, longer than you have, sir. But thank God I didn't say that, because I don't know, in the military, the technical folk or the folks in those senior leadership, senior officer positions generally don't know much about computers. So it was just, that was the first thing that popped in my head.
Yeah. Justin, anything you want to legally change about yourself? Like maybe your height?
I mean, can you make me a basketball player? Can I end up on the Celtics?
Well, if you identify as 6'8", then you are.
I mean, South Park did an episode about that, didn't they? Where Kyle tried to become a basketball player?
Yeah, he wanted to become a black basketball player, in fact.
Yeah, so
I identify as a man with a 10-inch penis.
And so you are. because of the new world nonsense order we live in.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, I understand the age thing too, but there's a certain amount of it that's valid, age discrimination. Like, you shouldn't sell a 69-year-old a house because he says he's the biological. This is the whole biological age thing too. I'll get to that in a second. But
wait, what? Why shouldn't we sell 69-year-olds houses?
Well, okay, maybe I don't understand, but if he can't pay off his loan, doesn't the bank lose that money?
Yeah, I mean, I guess kind of, but he'd have to account for that. Like, you know.
Fine, I will take back my statement, but I will say it's the bank's fucking decision if they want to sell it to him or not.
Okay.
Is that better? Is that better? I would not sell a house to 69.
I didn't get the house thing in the article. I was like, what's the problem with your buying a house? Do you have money? Buy the house.
He just wanted to go on Tinder, and he wanted to go on Tinder and say he was 49, or if his legal age was changed to 49, would be able to say he was 35 and lie and fuck younger women. That's all this is. That is all
Who
this is
puts
about.
Their actual age on a dating app? Well, I have never seen someone's true age on a dating app. Never.
First of all, I put my true age on a dating app when I was on it, and nobody believed me. They would measure. Yeah. They'd be like, "You're really early 30s? Are you sure you're not like 22?"
I had the same experience, and everyone thought I was younger than what my profile says. Now I'm old enough that my age, actually, people say, you know, like, not interested if you're over 35, right? And I'm 38. So I'm like, okay, well, I'll message him this in case, and I'll get the too old is usually the response. Or no response.
Well, as I think it was Adam Kroll pointed out, this guy thinks he has a good idea until he picks up a 19-year-old on Tinder who turns out to be 87. So.
Isn't the problem with our culture today that everyone's identifying as a 17-year-old?
It's true. It's true. Culture is designed for all these young, horrible people. Especially
well, that's
the
what
music.
This biological age thing is. Like, fucking, what, have you seen this? Like, when you, like, go to, like, get an assessment for a workout, they tell you how old your body is?
Really?
Like, yeah, what the fuck? Like, what? Does that stop you from dropping dead from an aneurysm randomly?
Well, how old is your body, Justin? And then how old do you identify as?
I've never gotten that done. I've never gotten that done. But I know people who have had it got done, and then it turned them incredibly insecure.
Oh, man. I wish I didn't dedicate myself to doing clean shows. Lots of jokes about the disparate age between yourself and your body age. So
yeah, if your body age is a lot younger than you, can you commit pedophilia by jerking off?
I wouldn't ask such a question. You might say that, but I couldn't possibly comment.
You just fucking incepted me to make the joke that you wanted to make. All right, this segment's over. Let's move on. It's time for the Hopeful Romantic with JML. Insiders out there, are you a fan of music? Are you a fan of treating your body like art and working out? Do you also have Spotify? Then you should go there and look up Midside Workout and listen to the Midside Workout playlist that I have personally curated and personally use at the gym. So not only is the Midside a place where you can go to witness the farce, but it is now a place where you can go to work out. In this week's review, I have nothing to talk about unless you want me to talk about the shitty Netflix movie I watched about how white men in high school are serial killers. So have you heard of Heartthrob, Daniel?
Is it a documentary?
It is not a documentary, although I wonder how fast they produced it, because it's about this kid who's really smart. He's going to go to MIT. He was his class valedictorian. And he falls in love with this girl and then starts to kill anyone who is interested in her until he kills himself. Spoiler alert. I was like, how'd you guys do the Brett Kavanaugh story so quickly?
No, I've never heard of this crap.
So I don't really want to talk about this. So I know Daniel has a stand-up comedian he wants to talk about really quickly. And then William's going to talk about Bohemian Rhapsody because there's been a lot of cultural conversation about it. And a movie that I actually thought would have been embraced by the left because it was about like a, what was he, sexually fluid or was he just gay, Daniel, Freddie Mercury?
He was bisexual?
Yeah, so, he was, I think he was bisexual, probably closet gay. It's a controversial topic.
Whatever, that's whatever the term is nowadays. Like, that's the thing. You say bisexual, he's probably pansexual nowadays, only in love with Peter Pan. So, who knows? But I would have thought the left would embrace this movie, but they seemingly have not. So, Daniel, William's going to talk about Bohemian Rhapsody. So, go ahead first, Daniel.
So, I brought up, I think, on the show before, Ryan Hamilton, who has a Netflix special called Happy Face. The reason it's called Happy Face is he looks like, in his own words, he could sell ice cream in the 50s. He looks exceedingly happy all the time. Giant smile, big toothy gums. He's a tall drink of water. Born in Idaho, now lives in New York. That's a big part of his comedy routine, is a fish out of water stories about his naivete. So I got to see him live. My wife and I went to see him live last night at Sixth and I, which is a synagogue, interestingly. Comedy show.
Were
in
you
synagogue.
Safe?
We were. There was so much armed security. I was a little bit taken aback by how much
armed
security
there was. And they
still
let a white man from the Midwest on stage?
I guess they did. I mean, they probably patted him down. I got wanded coming in. It was pretty crazy.
When they put the wand to you, you didn't say, "It's okay, I'm half Mexican"?
Excuse me, sir. I can do this. I'm half Mexican. I can do this to myself. So sometimes I feel like these young comedians who get Netflix specials, and by young, he's like in his 40s, but that's basically a young comedian these days. I feel like their follow-up is usually weak. So I was curious to see, because he tweeted out that he was going to be basically all new material. And I have to say, he was unbelievably funny. Unbelievably funny. If you haven't checked out his first special, you absolutely should. One of the things that makes him outstanding is, in the vein of Jim Gaffigan, he works totally without profanity. And I don't necessarily... I like Bill Burr, who is the opposite of that.
Say.
He works almost exclusively in profanity.
Yeah.
And that's also funny to me. But someone who can come up with these insanely clever premises and punchlines without going to curse words and being gross and sexual or whatever it is, I respect that a lot, because it's really difficult to make it not just like, haha, that's cute, like, you know, someone's at your work is funny, but to be just rip-roaringly, gut-smashingly funny, that takes a lot of talent. Justin, you'll appreciate, he has a set in the show about President The Rock. Good
what?
To think. Yep.
Why do these comedians keep stealing my bits, man? Joe Rogan stole my desalinate the ocean bit. This fucker's stealing my President Rock bit. Do they all listen to this show?
I guess they do. I mean, we're the new It show in Hollywood that people are
ripping
off.
I want my kickbacks,
so.
Motherfuckers.
Yeah. He did a whole bit about falling down because he's old now and he fell down. And got a real, like, almost boo from the audience when he said he Ruth Bader Ginsburg'd all over the sidewalk. I laughed my ass off. People did not find it funny in D.C. So overall, fantastic. And I only have one other thing to say about this, which is one of the things Adam Carolla has complained about before is, like, if you go see a band, for instance, and they don't play their hits, you're disappointed. But if you go see a stand-up comedian and they do a bit they've already done, you're kind of like, eh, heard it. That was the exact opposite of this show. By the time he got to the end, and you could tell it was the end, people were shouting out bits from his Netflix special, like, that they wanted him to do. Like, do the hot air balloon thing! Or, what's the other one he's really famous for? Out of breath, kids! Do the wind knocked out of you, kids! And so he just started doing bits from his Netflix special at request from the audience. And to me, that seems new. I don't know. I've been to a bunch of stand-up shows. I've never seen that happen before. Never.
The only other person I've seen that with is Dane Cook back in the day when he was going on college tours.
Oh, that's interesting. That's interesting. I wonder if it's because they're playing to younger audiences. I don't know. But it was like a concert in the sense that the audience was screaming out the hits that they wanted to hear. And he delivered, and they were excellent, and everyone laughed, even though at some point people were literally quoting line for line what he was going to say. like they were singing along at a concert. That part was really strange to me, but it was interesting. I was wondering if in the Netflix culture where we just rewatch things over and over again, if that's going to be more prevalent. So check out Ryan Hamilton on Netflix, and if he's coming to a city near you, the tickets won't be that expensive. I think ours were $30 or something like that, which isn't too bad for an hour and a half of stand-up.
So that would be $100 if you live in Southern California.
That's right. That's right. You have that fire tax to pay for all the burning buildings.
Oh, you didn't know they're adding that in? Like, are you joking? They're literally.
I was joking.
Oh yeah, they're adding that to utilities bills. They just voted a prop in for that.
Of course they did. Everyone's house is on fire. What could we do? Well, we could tax them more. Done and done. Terrible. William?
All right. Well, Bohemian Rhapsody. I went and saw it last week on a Tuesday night with my friends and my roommates. Right now, the movie is sitting at a very unrespectable 62% on the tomato meter with 94% audience score. So you know this is the kind of movie that that we like to talk about on the midside. So the movie is, in my opinion, pretty good. I enjoyed it. It really did a good job of centralizing the story. It's basically from the band's founding till about 1985. The music was amazing. The way they used all the music that was Queen actually singing from performances. And the actor who played him basically performed like the singing, the lip syncing, obviously, and dancing. But even down to the mannerisms, he just looked like Queen. He did such a good job. The performance is absolutely amazing. The music, there's a good 15-minute segment towards the end of the movie, sort of the climax of the movie at Live Aid. And kind of the plot of the movie is how the band is formed and then when the band breaks up. And then there's this really redeeming quality of Freddie Mercury coming back and convincing the band to do Live Aid. And he really makes up for the fact that he was a dick and broke up the band and said, like, hey, I need you guys. This kind of like the back and forth that we have, the contentious back and forth is really part of the creative process of the band. And it's very much a focus on Freddie Mercury. But the band is there as supporting cast and definitely have their own individual personalities. As far as criticisms of the film, there wasn't really anything that I could find wrong with the film that was egregious. But if I look at so you might be asking yourself, well, why is it get 62%? And I think the answer is it wasn't naturalistic enough. And what I mean by that is if you look at all the criticism from the film critics, they said that they were trying to cram too many years, 15 years into too small of a movie, that the plot was not accurate because Freddie Mercury didn't know he had AIDS until 87 and they had him in the pick kind of have it in 1985. But these are all criticisms like that I don't see as essential to being a good movie. Now, if this was a biography film instead of a biopic, a dramatization of his life, then I think those would be valid criticisms. But to me, those criticisms seem to miss the mark of this movie. This movie is telling a story about an artist and sort of with a theme of the creative process. And there's some sub themes about finding your way and finding your place and being true to yourself. I think it's a pretty interesting movie. Overall, I would give it a solid 8 out of 10. And I think if you guys like biopics or Queen, if you like movies with lots of good music, great performances, this is definitely something you should go see. And I think you should go see it in the theater. It really sounds amazing. And the seeing Wembley Stadium recreated digitally with the real crowds from the time, there's some really good high notes in the film. Don't see this movie if you don't like the music of Queen. Like I said, there's lots of Queen in here, how they made the songs. Actually, that was one of the criticisms, that they made the song in like, you know, 1 minute of movie time. And one of the critics didn't like that. But if you don't like the music of Queen, or you don't like movies that focus on music and artistry like this, this is not going to be a movie for you.
Well, my brain just farted there. You've definitely convinced me to see the movie. I was sort of on the edge about it. I knew my girlfriend wanted to see it. But the biggest thing for me is this whole, it's rated much higher on Rotten Tomatoes than it's, or by the audience, than it is by critics on Rotten Tomatoes. Weren't we talking about at some point putting together an algorithm that would display that we could put on our website?
Yeah. I'll have to think about that again. I think that would be a really interesting thing. We should scour and find all these movies. And I think this is a good example of, I wouldn't consider this a high art movie, right? This isn't Batman versus Superman, right? This isn't, but this is a great film, right? This is just a good film. And that's so rare these days. Everyone should go out and support it, you know, go out and have a good time and watch this movie.
Sounds good to me. I'm going to do that now. Wow, I'm amped up for this movie. Awesome. Although contentious words there saying Batman versus Superman is high art. You know I agree.
Well, I just want to manage expectations here. This is, with this critic rating, there's no way that, I can't say the actor's name very well, but he's the guy from Mr. Robot.
Rami Malek.
Yeah, Malek. And... If this movie was a little bit more objectively judged, I think he would get a Best Actor nomination at the very least. Like what he's doing here is amazing.
Wow. Now, I don't remember myself, but did you guys tackle or hug this when we talked about it on Trailer Takedown?
I hugged it. That's why I went and saw it.
I'm pretty sure I hugged it too. Queen is one of my all-time favorite bands. I mean, now that I have a 4-month-old, it's hard to get out of the house on the weekends, but I'd like to make time to see it in the theaters.
I think your baby should, as part of his education, see this film. So
just do what everyone else does with their babies: bring them places they shouldn't be and put those giant fucking headphones on them.
So give them an iPad and headphones.
My wife brings the baby to movies, does not bring the headphones, and the baby has now seen 4 movies and has watched them in their entirety, silently, like, loves them.
What movies?
Mission Impossible.
I am judging your child.
Mission Impossible, the newest one.
Okay.
Crazy Rich Asians.
Okay.
What was the one she just saw? It was the one that's part of the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo series. Spider Girl or something like that.
The Girl
that.
In the Spider's Web.
That one. And then I don't remember the 4th, but it was another, like, Girl on a Train or something like that. All movies my wife sees, I haven't seen any of them.
All right, well, the baby's batting 50%, so it's all right.
There's still time.
Isaac, just come talk to Uncle Justin.
That's right.
All right, we just mentioned Trailer Takedown, and if you want to know the movies we're going to talk about in Trailer Takedown before you listen to the episode, you can always go to themidside.com, and you will see the Trailer Takedown preview there. Or you could do it right now. You could pause the episode, go watch the trailers, or you could do it during Trailer Takedown. Pause, watch, listen, pause, watch, listen.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Captive State is a sci-fi movie that seems to have the exact same premise as Colony, the USA Network show by Carlton Cuse starring Josh Holloway, who played Sawyer on Lost. The main difference is, and this is what scares me about this movie, all of the people in captivity seem to be black. So I don't know if they're going to turn this into like a fascism thing about how white people are taking over the world. But this is a sci-fi movie. It is about how an alien race has come and they're holding humanity in a captive state. And they're trying to convince us that everything is better, right? They're saying the unemployment rate is the lowest, which isn't that something the Trump administration says, Daniel?
Yes.
So I do wonder if this was made specifically about the Trump administration, again, with the casting. So because I don't want to get involved with any of this and I miss good science fiction, this is a tackle, and I'm really interested in what William has to say because he's the sci-fi guy on here, but Daniel's going to go first.
I don't know. I don't know enough about it. It was difficult. I feel like I don't know. Did I see this somewhere? I felt like this movie, either I've already seen the trailer and I didn't remember where, or I've seen a movie just like this, or it feels like everything else that's coming out. Regardless, I like to reward originalism, not the judicial kind of originalism.
What, you mean so because this is like Falling Skies and Colony, it's original?
Well, I mean, it is following them, but it's an original script. I really like to see one more trailer before I made a determination, but at this point, it's a soft tackle. Like, if a group of people was going and they went, hey, come on, let's go, I'd be like, yeah, fine, let's go. But that's a fantasy because I don't have friends in DC, so there's no group of people going to be dragging me along to a movie. And so light, very light tackle, like super light tackle.
Yeah, I have to judge it just based on this trailer. I hadn't heard anything about this movie, and I don't really know what's going on. I guess that's the point of a teaser trailer. But you're right. All I could see was a politicization of things, and there's a way to do political sci-fi. I think Battlestar Galactica was a good example of that. This didn't seem like it was meeting that bar. It seemed kind of derivative. What's the District 9? Is that the movie I was thinking of? So it seems sort of District 9-ish meets Falling Skies. So to me, it didn't seem all that original. And I, like Daniel, I wish I could see a real trailer instead of just a teaser trailer. But for now, I have to tackle it.
And District 9 is a wonderful movie. I enjoyed that movie a lot.
Yeah, I did too.
Second trailer.
Ugly Dolls is an animated movie that seems to be trying to capitalize on the success of the Trolls movie. It's about brightly colored creatures that are supposedly ugly singing a lot. And Kelly Clarkson is the main character, I believe. Nothing much happens in this trailer. William, you just said you didn't really know what was going on in Captive State. There's not really a plot in this. But I did find myself, while I was watching this, want to see them either cross over with the trolls or come across a society of people who were truly beautiful, because these creatures aren't really ugly to me. Aesthetically, they're not ugly, which this movie has kind of painted itself into a corner by having main characters that are ugly, but because you're romanticizing them, they can't be actually ugly. That's a very weird thematic approach to things. But then at the end of the trailer, they actually go and see perfection. And then I need you guys to check me on this, because I didn't go back frame by frame. But was Perfection a town just full of white people?
I don't think so. It seemed to be a town full of children. Although I don't know anymore either.
I don't know. This thing was weird. Like, I can't believe I still can't believe I saw the Trolls movie. So I can't bring myself to see this.
There are minority children. I'm looking.
Okay. Good. I'm glad you're scrubbing it for me. Go ahead, Daniel.
Yeah. So ugly dolls are a thing, right? Like they're a toy or something?
I was hoping that.
I think this is a movie based on a toy, like a toy line. But they're not ugly. They're just sort of like, I don't know, they have three eyes or a missing hand. So I guess that makes them ugly for dolls.
Oh, yeah. But they're like an Asian type brand.
Yeah. So,
David Horvath and Sunmin Kim made them.
There you go. Trolls, despite my skepticism, was a very good animated movie, I thought.
Except for the fact that what's the Indiana Jones movie where he doesn't do anything?
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, it's similar to the main character. Anna Kendrick's character actually causes all the problems in the movie.
Yes. It's not going to win any writing awards, but it was an enjoyable film. I just don't get this one. Like, I kind of got Trolls. This, the message seems to be, even if you're hideous, you're still worth something, which, okay, fine, good theme, I guess. But I don't understand what they're overcoming here.
Perfection.
because they seem to be fine with themselves. They live in a village where everyone sings about how great they are every day. Like, if anything, the theme should be tone down your narcissism a little bit. But it's not. So I see a lot of animated movies, and I'm not going to lie to you. If this popped up on Netflix, I'd probably pop it on at some point, maybe at 2 a.m. when I'm feeding the baby. But otherwise, I'm not going to see this in theaters. So I guess if that's our criteria, I'm going to tackle it.
Tackle.
William.
Wasn't that first character singing about how she was singing about how she was ugly, but that she was good with it? And to me, this seems like we're teaching kids to fake reality. I don't understand. This seems like you were saying, that there's no real plot here. It seems just like a saccharine movie about singing to children. I don't think that's going to be that good. When's the next Pixar movie? Tackle.
Final trailer.
Missing Link is another animated movie about some guy hanging out with a monster named Link, who I guess is the missing genetic link. This reminded me of a cross between Littlefoot and Wallace and Gromit. Except again, I'm not sure what the plot of this movie is. He's trying to find his cousins, which, how does that make sense? If he's the missing link, which we've never been able to find, now there's a whole bunch of fucking cousins out there too? What is going on? This did not appeal to me at all, and I'm hoping, Daniel, maybe you can redeem this one. I know I'm about to trigger a rule here, but tackle. Daniel?
I want to like this. The animation looks very good. I thought the voice acting for Link, the half-ape, half-man thing, was good. But the plot does seem to be a little weird. That being said, I think there's enough here for me to see this, simply because I'm an animation enthusiast, so on those grounds alone, I'm going to sort of lightly, cautiously hug it.
Hug.
But overall, I don't know if something is wrong with trailers nowadays, or if I've just become cynical in my old age, but I just feel like these trailers don't put their best foot forward. They don't put their big foot forward in this case. They put some sort of nonsense forward. I don't know if it's something that works on younger people, but it's not working on me.
William.
So this movie looked okay, but I think I agree with Daniel. Like, there's not much to get out of this trailer to tell you what the movie's going to be like. That being said, it looked original and okay. So I'll give it the barest, lightest, most friendly, but not really friends, hug.
Hug.
You pussies are just trying to avoid the all tackle rule.
No, I had this on my notes beforehand. I already knew that I was going to do this one.
So, Justin, which one will you watch if we put a gun to your head?
I would watch Captive State. I like Colony. I watched all of Falling Skies. I like science fiction. I'm down for the story type, and I'd enjoy watching it even if it had a super leftist agenda.
I'm going to spoil that movie for you. The aliens are Trump.
So it's like the first episode of Star Trek Discovery?
Yeah,
that's right.
Oh God,
So
why do you have to? Yeah. Why do you have to traumatize me so?
Trigger warning, Justin. So just so you both know, there's only one official upcoming Pixar release noted, although other projects are in the pipeline, and that is Toy Story 4, June 21, 2019.
Really?
Yep.
They only have one movie?
You know, the others are in the works, I'm sure, but that's the only one slated for release. They wow. have 5 untitled projects, but
wow, they just like released a bunch and had a bunch of marketing. Maybe they don't want to oversaturate the market.
Yeah.
All right, let's finish up this episode on a relevant discussion with our topic here. This is the White Wave edition. So let's talk about something relevant to that and all of the news in Life on the Midside. prior episodes to this episode, we had listener submissions, and those went really well, and I was really happy with them. They were really good topics and spawned really good discussion, both on the show and in real life. So listeners out there, you want to submit a topic for Life on the Midside, something we can discuss, you know, something you want some advice on, you can reach out to any of us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. There's a contact page on the website, themidside.com, or you can also... William, where?
Join Discord. Go to themidside.com/podcast. Check the show notes of this or any episode. And at the bottom, you'll see our link to our Discord server.
But don't give us Woker Joke submissions in Discord unless it's in the super secret Woker Joke channel.
That's right. And for those of you that are Patreon members, make sure you connect your Patreon account so you get access to those super secret channels we've been talking about.
Okay, so here's what I wrote down, and if you read the show note on themidside.com, you'll see this question in here. This is kind of like what's going through my head whenever I see, like, oh, white people this, white people that, blah, blah, blah. How do you not defend your, scare quotes around your, group? For me, it's really easy to not claim the successes of others as my own. Maybe that's due to my low self-esteem. But attacks against white people can make me bristle due to personalizing them. Is that reaction again due to my low self-esteem?
Justin, did you write this question?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Wait a minute.
I think this is something that I've thought about some, because it's interesting. It depends on what people are defining the group as, and the reason I say that is, like, if someone was, you know, attacking the company I work for, let's say I'm a member of that group, and I would feel like I would want to defend that group, right? The issue though is with white people, I just don't buy that's a group, right? We've talked about it on the show before. What do people mean when they say white people? So
What do you mean, you people?
Exactly. And also, there's another aspect of this too, right? We talk about that there's this idea, there's two sides to the tribalistic coin. There's when people look at a group and what's generally true about the group and immediately apply to the individuals. And then there's the aspect where they take an individual, decide what groups they belong to, and then draw conclusions based on that, right? Those are two sides of the same tribalistic coin. And it sounds like if someone's attacking white people and you're taking, you know, you feel like you're taking it personally, I think that part, you can be half right and half wrong, right? If they're meaning it to attack you, then certainly you should challenge the assumption, right? Like, what do you mean by white people? Do you mean that I'm this way? Are all people this way? And then on the other side of the coin, though, like, does it matter, right? Like, this white people thing is just a term used by the social justice left to put to other people, right? To use one of their terms, to put it as a us versus them thing. We're part of the world's smallest minority, the individual. I see this happen with the gay community. You know, people will say something bad about gays, and it's very rare that I'm taking it personally, right? It's only when they're talking about me, right? They're trying to draw conclusions because I'm gay, that I start to bristle.
Yeah, and that's something that I want to be clear about when asking this question is you raise a lot of good points, and the point you make about not personalizing it is it's only really when I read these news stories, like the first news story where the guy was like, let's do something about all white men. Part of me is like, I'm a white man. What does he want to do about me? And it's more the fear that that's what they're going to think about me. Like, if you hear someone saying something about white men and you're standing there and you, like, look around and you're like, well, shit, that's got nothing to do with me. But what does everyone around me think of me right now? That's what I'm talking about. It's not like a main driving force in my life, but it's like you said, the social justice words, it's used socially, and that's the main fear. Do you get what I'm saying, Daniel?
Yeah. As someone who you know, I've never thought of myself as white particularly, although I get put in that category always because of my skin tone.
Racism.
I never felt like I had to defend white people. So my tact on this has always been never to defend a group, but to attack the person making these stupid claims. And that's whether it's about white people, black people, gays, Republicans.
And by attack, Democrats. You mean with your fists or a bat, right?
Yeah. Like Antifa. You know, whatever club is closest, whatever bludgeon is within arm's reach. No, with words, with logic, with like, what do you mean? You think
so words are violence is what you're saying.
Yes, basically. So lately, especially because of the attacks on white people, when people make claims about white people, I am the first one in a group of conversation to tell them that they're a racist. And that has led to some uncomfortable moments. But my point I want to point out to them is you can, I mean, insert Jews with what you just said, or insert Indians or black people or whatever, and we'd all agree you're a racist. And just because it's white people, especially because white is a, you know, this huge collective, it's not an actual group, you're a racist. And if you're going to make those claims, I'm going to call you a racist. And not the way, you know, like Jim Acosta calls Republicans racist or whatever it is. You're an actual racist if you're making those claims. And so pointing out the flaws in these people's arguments, I think for me, has worked as a tactic that means I don't have to defend my group, whatever that means. It simply allows me to point out the idiocy in their thinking. But I have a sort of related question to this, which is, when do you start to take these things seriously as a collective? And to put a really concrete point on it, i.e. reductio ad Hitlerum, you know, the rhetoric about Jews in Germany, it didn't happen just like overnight and suddenly Germans hated the Jews and wanted to round them up. Like, there was a lot of rhetoric leading up to that. Like, Jews are the problem, they're greedy, they're this, they're that. Jews are the source of all of German ills. And, you know, you have to, because they didn't all flee, you have to think that many of the Jews thought, well, they're not talking about me, or it's just rhetoric. You know, they're not going to do anything about it. But at some point, they did do something about it, something horrific about it. So that's part of my question, is like, when do you start to take this group think seriously in a certain sense? Like, when a guy writes an article about, you know, white people being terrorist killers, when do you start to take that super seriously?
Or Sanders talking about the 1%. I hope to be in
yes,
the 1%.
Yes, totally.
One of these tax
1%ers,
years.
Capitalists, anything like that. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and that goes back to what I was saying about the whole, like, Trump's the wrong person to back, because I think there are a lot of people taking it seriously, and then they get called white nationalists, and they get called alt-right, and that leads to the further fear, and the further fear of the divide that I have, is this whole idea of, it's like you're being forced to pick one of these sides, and both sides are fucking crazy.
Yeah, I guess I don't fear the divide, because I'm divided from the two divides, so I want more division. In a way, right? I want civility and more division. Those are the things I want.
Yeah, but the reason
the thing I fear is not the divide. It's that that there are very few folks standing up to violence, actual violence here. I'm not talking about hate speech. I'm talking about the real stuff, right? There's not enough people calling out that kind of violence that we see on both sides. To me, it seems like we're reliving the 70s. And I wasn't even alive back then. I was talking to my mom about it last week. You know, I was asking her, like, is this the similar cultural feel as the 70s? And she had some good points. She agreed with me on that.
But William, I agree with what you're saying. And it's that violence is ultimately what I'm afraid of, because when the divide is there, and if it reduces into violence, no one's going to take the time to ask me if I'm removed from the two sides. I'm fine in my moral life because I know that I am thinking and acting in a way that I am morally upstanding, because I know I'm standing by not taking either of these two sides. But no one, when they see me, is going to think that. They're automatically going to group me in a side, and ultimately, it could lead to me being harmed if things continue to go down the path they're going, and that's what I'm afraid of.
I'm sure you've experienced this many times. I've experienced this almost my whole life. I talk to someone that has very left views. They accuse me of being on the right. I talk to someone on the right, some religious right person. They accuse me of being on the left. I think that's actually a good thing, right? If my existence confounds both sides and there are more people like us, then that's the part. As long as we are using our words to stand up against these things, and that's what matters. As long as we're making the moral arguments. Now, if we start, you know, ramping up on hate speech laws, and you know, YouTube continues to block people for arbitrary reasons and no one can get their message out, then we have to start worrying. So there is a little bit of worry, but I'm way less worried than you are on that. I think just like the 70s, this is a sort of history repeating itself. We're going to have, you know, we're going to have the 80s soon, right? We're going to get out of this. The young people today, while very much narcissistic, there's going to be a generation behind them that sees what that narcissism leads to, and just be punk about it. And I'm looking forward to the next punk rock decade.
More punk rock, more Steven Seagal movies. I am in. I love the 80s.
Let's just hope it's not the 2080s.
Oh, I thought he meant the next decade. I got really excited all of a sudden. I was like, that's 2 years away, man. I'm still pretty young.
Yeah.
I identify as a 20-year-old, so I'll be around in the 2080s.
Just to put a downer note on it, the only thing I'll say about that, William, is that I think that while it's interesting analysis, that history is not determined, and the cyclical nature of history can be interrupted by horrible ideologies. So
I guess ultimately the takeaway is sort of continue with your moral certainty. Mm-hmm. And
to put a lighter spin or a more uplifting spin on it, we have something now that they did not have in Weimar Germany, and that's we have better ideas.
So I thought you were going to say Tom Brady.
And Bill Belichick. We have those things.
I was going to say, don't focus on the things you can't control, because you can never control the things you can't control, and if you focus on that, it's just going to drive you insane.
Yeah. Again, don't be a Democrat. Don't be upset about other people's volition.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, gentlemen. What did we learn this trip?
I learned that I'm bringing Daniel to my next mandatory diversity and inclusion training at work, so that he could just shout, "That's racist," every time they start saying bullshit about group identity.
Yeah, I was really curious about that, Daniel, is how you could get through the day. Like, I would be saying that 24 hours a day out here if I did that.
I do say it almost on a daily basis to someone.
More power to you, man. What did you learn?
I learned that if the IRS is listening, I identify as someone who makes below the poverty line. Thank you.
I was explaining that to my girlfriend. I was saying, I used to say on the podcast that I'm trans wealthy. I identify as wealthy. So you all are obligated to make that reality come true by giving me money.
There you go. What did you learn, Justin?
I need to watch Ryan. What's his last name?
Hamilton.
Ryan Hamilton on Netflix. And I need to make it a priority to go to the movies and see Bohemian Rhapsody. Although I still have not seen Bad Times at the El Royale.
I've heard very little about that movie.
That's why I want to see it. It looks so good and no one said shit. It's got to be good, right?
The critics ignored it. It must be good. So don't ignore us, people. When we ask you to do things like share with a friend, we mean it. It's the holiday season. You're going to be gathered with your friends and family, eating all the turkey your little belly can hold, and stuffing and pie and cranberry sauce, and watching football, hopefully. While you're all post-meal comed, make sure that you mention that you also listen to The Midside and get them turned on to it. Send them to themidside.com/podcast, where they can listen to past episodes, or send them to iTunes or Google Play. And while you're there, why don't you leave a little 5-star review for this holiday season for us, and tell us some of your favorite memories of years past. We have themidside.com/store with t-shirts and stuff. We have Patreon. Thanks to liberty.me for syndicating the show. And yeah, until next time, we love you.
This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Elmanzeski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
Have a day.